Jesus gives us two parables in this passage in Luke chapter 14, and they stress that we are to consider the price we will pay for being a disciple of his. Much like a poker player who goes all in on a bet, a disciple is gambling everything in life on the Lord Jesus. The wise person does not make that choice impulsively.
Welcome to the Parable Podcast. Thanks for joining Family Life On Air host Randy Snavely as he digs into the story lessons taught by the world's greatest teacher, Jesus. In this episode, it's part two of All for One and One for All, as Jesus talks about the cost of discipleship, taken from Luke 14, 25 through 35.
Christian theologian Francis Schaeffer did not grow up in a Christian home. He came to Christ as a teenager, and when it was time to head off to college, Schaeffer wanted to study for the ministry. His father, however, was violently opposed to him going, and Francis was torn between his love for the Lord and his love for his father. Praying about the issue made it clear in the young man's mind that he needed to study for the ministry. One day, Schaeffer's father met him at the door and said, "I don't want a son who is a minister, and I don't want you to go." Francis went off to pray some more about the issue and came back to his father saying, "Dad, I've got to go." Enraged, his father slammed the door in his face. Schaeffer later commented that few choices had been more costly than the decision about whether to please the Lord or his father. His father returned minutes later to declare that, although he disagreed, he would still pay for his son's first year. But Schaeffer's choice of loyalties, difficult as it was, bore rich dividends. It laid the foundation for a fruitful ministry, and it also resulted in his father's eventual salvation. We are answering the question, what did Jesus mean when he says we need to give up everything to follow him? From Luke chapter 14, verses 25 through 35. Well, number one, say goodbye to past priorities. Number two, say goodbye to current and future goals. Anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Once again, Jesus uses an illustration every Jew in the crowd was quite familiar with. The cross was used long before Jesus came on the scene. Picturing a man carrying a cross to his execution was vivid in their minds. The cross wasn't used just to kill. It was used to inflict severe pain and agony. It was used to humiliate and shame a person. He no longer had plans for dinner that night. He no longer had any plans for the future. He was about to die. And his shame was exposed for all to see. The cross is not a symbol for the trivial problems and burdens we face in life. The cross speaks of humiliation, excruciating pain, and certain death. Pastor Gary Inrig says dying for Christ is a real possibility for some. But for most of us, this verse describes a process, as if to say this is about anyone who does not keep on carrying his cross and keep on following me. It is about continually denying self and living in submission to the Lord's will. Years ago, I was asked to lead a church service at an infirmary on a Sunday afternoon. I didn't really want to do it. What I wanted to do was stay home and watch football. Begrudgingly, I agreed to do the service, and I asked one of the teen musicians at Family Life to come along and provide the special music. Well, Pam happily agreed and said she would meet me there. After the service got over, the nurses were late in coming back into our room, so Pam suggested we start wheeling the patients back to their rooms. Again, I wanted to get out of there and go watch football, but that wouldn't look so good, so I agreed to help wheel some of the patients back to their rooms. One of the ladies slumped forward in her chair. I came around front to make sure she was okay, and she threw up on me. A nurse quickly came over and said, "I'll take care of her. You go get cleaned up." I was so mad. I cleaned up as best as I could and got on the elevator to leave. Just before the doors closed, Pam stepped in. She asked me what had happened, and after explaining it all to her, I asked her, "Pam, why did you agree to come here this afternoon? Didn't you have other plans?" She said, "Randy, nobody loves these people. Nobody ever comes to visit them. Yes, I had other plans, but this is where I know the Lord wants me to be." Here I was, supposed to be the spiritual leader, and a teenage girl taught me a lesson on denying self and doing what Christ told us to do. For the disciple of Jesus Christ, it is not about our ambitions or wants or desires or goals that will determine how we live. God's will and Christ's mission should make that determination. Jesus gives us two parables in this passage in Luke chapter 14, and they stress that we are to consider the price we will pay for being a disciple of His. Much like a poker player who goes all in on a bet, a disciple is gambling everything in life on the Lord Jesus. The wise person does not make that choice impulsively. You are listening to Family Life's Parable Podcast, All for One and One for All, Part 2. It's taken from Luke's Gospel, chapter 14, verses 25 through 35. The first parable reveals a very careless person who starts building a tower without considering the amount of time and money it would cost him to finish the project. Ultimately, he gets ridiculed for his impulsive commitment. The teaching here is, yes, enthusiasm is a good trait, but it can disappear and fail to carry someone through tough times. Discipleship is not an occasional activity. It is continuous, and many times it is difficult feeling the burden of the cross. Pastor Enrig says discipleship is an exciting adventure, but it is also a draining and demanding lifestyle. My father pastored a small church in West Virginia early on in his ministry, and it was a very trying time. A lot of young people were coming to Christ, which made for a very exciting time, but there were some difficulties. My dad preached three times a week, ran the youth group, led the singing, even directed the Easter cantata. Physically, it was exhausting, but the Lord was adding to the church almost weekly. The chairman of the deacon board was not happy, however. He realized that he would soon lose control because so many young married couples were coming to Christ and joining the church. He quickly realized that he and his crew would be outnumbered soon and thus outvoted. So the chairman arranged for my dad to be fired from the job. My dad said in his book, An Ordinary Guy with an Extraordinary God, "I was wounded and worn out. Struggling with the forces of evil can be exhausting if one does not take on the whole armor of God. However, all of the wounds, struggles, and stress is lessened when we recognize that it is all part of God's plan in preparing us for that prepared place to minister." In the second parable, a king is about to be invaded by an army twice as big as his. What do I do? What do I do? Do we fight or try negotiating a settlement? Fighting and winning means freedom. Fighting and losing means slavery. Negotiating a peace plan probably means losses of freedoms, but no losses of life. But the decision needs to be made immediately. The opposing army is on the way. If the king delays in making a decision here, he will have a fight whether he wants one or not. The point in the first parable was to count the cost of discipleship. The lesson here, consider the consequences of refusing discipleship. One way or another, you have to choose. Not to decide is to decide not to become a disciple, and you'll miss out on the joy of knowing and following the Lord. There will be no sharing in His victories, and you really will not know what genuine living is. What was it Jesus said? Whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will save it. Count the cost of discipleship and consider the consequences of refusing discipleship. There is a price to be paid either way. I give up my personal relationships, my personal preferences, and my personal resources. Now, some clarification here. That does not mean I give them away. I don't give away my wife and kids or my house. What it does mean is I give up ownership of them to Him. Jesus wraps up His talk illustrating how His disciples are to live. He says salt is good. Especially in Jesus' day, salt was extremely valuable. It was even used as currency. People were paid in salt. Salt was a purifying agent. It was a preserving agent. It was a seasoning agent. Salt was considered essential to everyday life. But salt became useless if it lost its saltiness. But salt never lost its saltiness in Bible times except for one way. Salt from the Dead Sea often attached itself to a form of gypsum. If it wasn't processed correctly, the salt became tasteless. What do you use saltless salt for? Nothing. It's no good. Disciples of Christ are supposed to be the moral preservatives and the seasoning agents for the world. And the source of our saltiness is our attachment to Christ. We commit our relationships, goals, possessions, and heart to Him. If we attach them to something or someone else, we lose our spiritual distinctiveness and become saltless. We're useless. How are you building? Carelessly or carefully? Are you choosing actively or drifting dangerously? Count the cost and consider the consequences. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Or if you have understood what has just been said, embrace it.
This has been the Parable Podcast with Randy Snavely. Click the subscribe button so you'll know when new episodes are released. And be sure to check out Family Life's other original podcasts, including If That Makes Sense, Business by the Book, and Rise Up with Steve, Therese, and Tim. Family Life is a listener-supported ministry. Your partnership makes podcasts like this possible. Find out more at familylife.org.